This KPCC podcast is supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting Wonder Woman, directed by Patty Jenkins and starring Gal Gadot. Vanity Fair said Wonder Woman is a triumph. Wonder Woman for consideration in all categories, including Best Picture.
Week on 89.3 KPCC. It's great to have you with us. I'm Alex Cohen sitting in this week for Larry Mantle. Coming up, award season is on the horizon, and our Film Week critics will be sharing their top three movies of the year, plus with some major releases in 2017 like I, Tonya, Battle of the Sexes, and Molly's Game, we'll take a look at how female athletes have been portrayed in film. We welcome you to call in with your favorite films about women in sports. And speaking about strong female leads, we are lucky to have two new movies to review. They're both releasing this week. They both feature strong female protagonists. Here to talk more about them, our Film Week critics, Amy Nicholson, co-host of the Canon podcast, Wade Major of Cinegods.com, and KPCC film critic Andy Klein. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
First up on the docket, Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. This is based on a true story. This is a film from Scotland. It's about a British actor named Peter Turner and his relationship with a Hollywood actress, much older, Gloria Graham. Jamie Bell plays Peter Turner. Annette Bening plays Gloria Graham. Paul McGuigan is the director. Amy, how do you like it?
Well, Gloria Graham, for people at home who might have watched It's a Wonderful Life this week before the holidays,
Yeah. She
plays Violet, the woman of ill repute who flirts very heavily with every man in the town. She was this sexpot actress who I think was better known for her romantic relationships off screen than she was for the fact that she won an Oscar for the film The Bad and the Beautiful. Her most famous scandal was probably that she, well, it was definitely that she fell in love with and married her husband's son.
Director Nicholas Ray of King of Kings.
This is going to be her stepson then, just to make clear.
Her stepson, yeah. Okay. They began an affair when he was 13, and after she divorced his dad, they got married about 10 years later, I think. This picks up far after that when she's romancing another young man. Hmm. And she's played here by Annette Bening, who looks so much like Gloria Graham that when they show old footage of Gloria Graham, they don't even change it. It's not even Annette Bening, like, in younger woman makeup. They just have the same eyes, the same face. It's pretty phenomenal. Mm. And it's a film about a woman who wants to go out of this world as a woman, as somebody with love and flirtation, who's a little vain, a little ridiculous, who doesn't realize what stress she's putting on the family of this kid who she just shows up at his house to die of cancer and have his parents take care of her. It's kind of a sweet film that I thought was ridiculous as I was watching it.
There are a lot of these memoirs, and there have been for decades, these memoirs written by people who had a brush with fame. They got to know a celebrity or somebody later on in their lives. My Week with Marilyn is one of those.
I was going to say, My Week with This is, I haven't seen this new one yet, but it reminds me of that.
And there are at least one of these films a decade that is based in one of those memoirs where, you know, I'm just an ordinary person, but I got to know Sinatra during a weekend in, you know, Reno, whatever. They're sort of guardedly interesting in the sense that they're not really about the celebrity as much as they are about the person who is having the experience with celebrity, and it's a memorable moment in their lives. And these movies never really – I mean, My Week with Marilyn I think is a wonderful film, but it doesn't sort of stick with you. And this is the same way. McGuigan does some interesting things in directing it. He's a decent director. He's been around a long time, Lucky Number 11 and a few other films. But ultimately, I just kind of felt like this is – it's just an episode in everyone's life, and it didn't really rise to that level.
Wow, wait, you must have an interesting life.
we're film critics. We're constantly around celebrities.
I want to hear about your special time with a celebrity later on. But Andy, first, let's turn to you. What did you make of Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool?
I certainly liked it more than Wade did, partly because I'm a Gloria Graham fan, and even though you could, you know, take offense at the portrayal if you're a Gloria Graham fan, Annette Bening makes it totally believable.
Oh, she does. She's wonderful.
And she, you know, my feeling is she kind of carried the film, even though the boy is more the POV of the film. And she's the object he looks at. But she gets sort of this right blend of flirtation in age-appropriate, inappropriate ways, and also kind of deep denial about her life. And that's sort of tragic. I think it's really a richer role than Gloria Graham ever got to play. I mean, my favorites for her are In a Lonely Place and, oh boy, Fritz Lang, Give It to Me.
Oh, yeah, now I'm drawing a blank too. Well, anyway. What's interesting too is that screenwriter Matt Greenhalgh gets a special thanks in My Week with Marilyn, and he's kind of a specialist in real life adaptations. He did Control and Nowhere Boy, which were
about the Beatles.
So I mean, that's why you go to him. So there's some connective tissue here. I think this is about. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm really down on it. I enjoyed it. It's about the best movie you can make about this story. But I just don't know that the story really warrants this much screen time.
Although I guess what makes it special from something like My Week with Marilyn is Marilyn Monroe is a giant star, full stop.
True.
And Gloria Graham has been forgotten, and she's forgotten even in the course of making, even during this time that the movie is set. People keep looking at her in pubs and being like, oh, was that woman that my mom used to like? And there's a tragedy to her that I really liked, what Andy was saying.
The tragedy of her vanity, I think, is the thing that maybe is most depressing about it.
And at the beginning, you can find it, her vanity really irritating, but by the end, you kind of get
you're
it.
You're won over by it a little bit.
The film is Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, starring Annette Bening and Jamie Bell. Moving on to the other new release this week, it's called In the Fade. It is a drama from Germany. Wade, want to give us the synopsis of this film?
Yeah, this is from Fatih Akin, who is a German filmmaker of Turkish ethnicity. His films in the past have primarily dealt with all of those issues of, you know, German nationality, Turkish identity, European identity. It's very much a part of his upbringing, this kind of cross-cultural stuff. He's a great filmmaker. Made a movie some years ago called Head On, which I still think is one of the great movies of the last 15, 20 years. He's never really risen to that level again. I think this is kind of treading in a little bit the same territory. It stars Diane Kruger as a woman who has married an ethnic Turk, had a child, and then there is a tragedy that results in her suffering an incredible difficult transition in life, and it wrestles with a lot of political issues and ethnic issues that are prevalent in Germany. You get an interesting insight into the German legal system, a courtroom segment in the film that is unlike anything you've probably ever seen before. It's certainly not like our court system, and I think on balance it's a good film. It's not a great film because it kind of, you compare it in your head to things like Kieslowski's Three Colors Blue with Juliette Binoche, which deals with a very similar emotional dilemma in a much broader existential way.
It's a whole
different level. It doesn't really rise above comparable films that deal in this territory, but it's perfectly serviceable.
Andy?
Yeah. I pretty much agree with Wade on this. It is actually sort of as a thriller. It works because there's a crime.
But it doesn't it doesn't become a thriller until later. That's what's weird. It doesn't start as a thriller. It becomes one.
That's sort of what I thought was interesting. Diane Kruger, who does not get a lot of leads, and the last one I can remember was a horrible film, Copying Beethoven. Is that what it was called?
No, I didn't see that.
Well, Ed Harris was Beethoven.
That movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was never quite sure whether she could handle an entire film, because she's been in several films where she's the pretty face. Mm. And I was pleasantly surprised by her.
We just have about a minute left, so Amy, your take on In the Fade.
Well, yeah, to Andy's point, Diane Kruger has this Marlena Dietrich bone structure. She looks fierce, And here, I think she's got a really good role for her. The woman she's playing, Katya, is not a normal woman who fits into society. Her very first scene is marrying a man while he's in prison. She's covered in random tattoos. She's goofy. She's funny. She's a misfit. And I like that this movie is about what happens when a tragedy happens to somebody who doesn't fit into our typical box of victim. Although I'm with Wade, to me, my favorite part of this film was the clinical section in the courtroom. I mean, I want to be a German judge.
No, stay with us as a film critic. We're talking about In the Fade, a new drama from Germany. We'll be hearing our critics' top three picks for the year 2017 when Film Week continues. Don't go away. On 89.3 KPCC, I'm Alex Cohen filling in for Larry Mantle. On this, the last film week of 2017, we're going to take a look back at the year in film with our critics, Amy Nicholson, Wade Major, and Andy Klein. So much to talk about, but we're going to try to limit it. And Wade, let's start with you. An honorable mention, if you want to give a shout out for number three, and then lots straight into your number two favorite film of the
year.
Three was
my number one for most of the year until the last couple of weeks. Their Finest by Danish director Lone Scherfig, which I think is the best of the three Dunkirk-themed films this year. I thought it was an absolutely amazing film, just beautifully written, beautifully directed all across the board. Number two for me, I talked about just a week or two ago on this show, Wormwood. The four-hour Errol Morris documentary, which is like a narrative film nested in a documentary. It's two in one. Story of the mysterious death of an army scientist and unraveling that through interviews with his son and others. And then my number one film is Scott Cooper's Hostels with Christian Bale and Rosamund Pike and Wes Studi. An amazing, quote-unquote, revisionist Western, which I guess is what we're supposed to call everything in the wake of Dances with Wolves and Unforgiven, that doesn't sort of romanticize the genre. I thought it was an extraordinary film and a great feather in the cap for Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios, which is releasing it and has finally really made a splash among distributors.
Excellent. All right, Amy, now turning to you, an honorable mention, and then your number two favorite pick.
Yeah, well, I'm giving my number three slot to Sean Baker's The Florida Project. I just think Sean Baker is one of the most fascinating directors working today. He assembles these casts of first-time actors and figures out how to turn them into like huge dramatic movie stars telling stories that people don't see. You know, he finds the corners of America, but he's not making these sentimental films about Trump's America. He's making whole, beautiful, well-rounded stories set in places we don't get to go. I think he's fascinating.
And in this case, this was Kissimmee, Florida, and Willem Dafoe's in it as well.
He is, and he's fantastic. And the two of us, everybody in this room, we're giving Willem Dafoe LAFCA's Best Supporting Actor Award in a few weeks for this film.
Oh, exciting. All right, you're number two for 2017.
I've got to give my number two to Lady Bird. I mean, I was a Catholic schoolgirl with pink hair who had pretensions of a...
Ever jump out of a car, Amy?
My dad ran over my foot on accident once, but that's about as close as we got. Anyways, I felt like Lady Bird was written about me. Mm. And the great surprise of this year has been finding that everybody else feels like it was a film about them, too. There's something so human in the story that Greta Gerwig has made. It's so universal. And I think Saoirse Ronan, she's been nominated for, what, two Oscars already? Yeah. This is definitely going to be her third.
It's on my top 10 as well.
Yeah.
I love this film.
I'm right there with you. All right, I'm going to have you hold off on your number one so we can build some suspense here as we turn to Andy Klein, your number three and number two choice.
Number three was Molly's Game, though I have to say. It was a tight one between that and the documentary Rat Film.
Ooh, Rat Film.
Yeah. But Molly's Game, a much higher profile movie with Jessica Chastain playing a frustrated skier who becomes this poker lord, poker lady, I guess, running high stakes games and trying to stay within the law. But that means she's in bad, you know, bad company. I just thought that she was real good, as she usually is. And the film leaves it in terms of whether it's factual or not. It is all told from her POV. So there's no counterbalance to that, which is fine if you don't, maybe there was something much, much different. Anyway, The Shape of Water is my number two.
I like that you go from something that is a nonfiction story to something that's about as fiction as I imagine you can get. Nicely done, sir.
You mean Shape of Water? That happened to me.
And for folks, this is Guillermo del Toro's film.
Yeah.
You want to just give listeners a brief recap?
Guillermo del Toro, who I think is a great director, this is a fairy tale updated to current times, where Sally Hawkins plays a mute woman who works in a government lab or a government contractor lab, and they bring in essentially Aquaman. You know, they bring in half fish, half guy, and beyond all possibility, you know, all likelihood, there is a love story there. And they actually make you buy it, which I was really impressed by. Also, like all Guillermo del Toro films, it looks great. And Michael Shannon gets to be just as nasty as Michael Shannon can be.
Which is pretty nasty. Yeah. So I kind of always like him best, the nastier he gets. All right, Amy Nicholson, let's turn to you for your number one pick. Of all the movies of 2017, your favorite was?
My number one is a movie everybody can watch right now if you feel like it. It is Casting JonBenet. This was a documentary I saw at Sundance almost a year ago. It made it to the top of my Sundance list. It hasn't been knocked off this entire year. And what it is it's in kind of an inversion of the documentary you might be picturing if you're thinking about this being a film about JonBenet Ramsey. If you're thinking about this in the key of, like, say, I, Tonya, or one of the O.J. Simpson docs. This is a film about Kitty Green, the director, casting people who want to play the Ramseys and their boy and their child, the parents, the cops, everybody. And she has these local actors from Colorado sit down and tell her what they think happened in the story that they all remember very well about, you know, the beauty queen murdered on the day after Christmas. And what you find out is really just that, you know, all of these people are getting to the essential actor question, you know, what's my motivation? And this tabloid story of the Ramseys, this idea that Patsy Ramsey was this jealous ex-fading beauty queen who killed her daughter maybe because she was turning 40 and was jealous, this ludicrous thing that we all bought on the cover of tabloids, the more these actors try to explain it, the less sense it makes to them. And you just wind up finding so much empathy for these people that we only knew through, you know, schlock TV programs. This is one of the most human stories I've seen all year, and it's very, very unusual. Netflix bought it right at the festival, put it on Netflix so nobody saw it, and I'm hoping people correct that now.
Because there's so much good stuff right now on Netflix, including Wormwood, which was Wade's number two pick. Andy Klein, back over to you for your number one favorite film of 2017. What might it be?
The only film that made me want to run out of the theater and call my friends to come see it was Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which Martin McDonagh's mostly serious, comedy. It's very funny, but it's serious stuff in there. Frances McDormand, I thought this was her best performance since Fargo. And in fact, the film feels a little bit like a Coen Brothers film. And Frances McDormand being there adds to that. But this is a film where, you know, characters, you keep finding new depths in characters and people do things that genuinely surprise you. I just thought it was terrific.
I have to say I congratulate all three of you for bringing in what sound like excellent films, the ones I haven't seen yet. But also, this is just really a diverse mix of films. Wade, just looking back at the year that was in film in 2017, does kind of the eclectic nature of all of this say anything to you about what a year it was in movies?
Yeah, it's funny because every so often we'll get a year where there aren't really any films that wow us, but there's an amazing diversity of subjects and concerns and filmmakers and themes, and this was one of those years. I don't think there was anything that just hit me like a lightning bolt. But you even saw it in our voting meeting that there was just an incredible volume of movies that everyone had some positive feelings about. So I think it was a very rich year in that regard.
And Amy, you and I were talking during the break. I have a bunch of these screeners at home, and I kind of keep reshuffling the order because there's so many of them that I'm dying to see that I don't have the time. And we should kind of also talk about the other side of the coin here, which is it seems like in 2017 there were a lot of movies that were not lousy, which is kind of surprising too.
It's nice. I mean, this is one of those years where, to Wade's point, we don't have that swaggering big dog come in. We're all looking at it like, okay, La La Land. I mean, wait, I'm still mad at you for all of your La La Land. La La Land,
me
raw,
too.
Rawing. You. But yeah, the range of this. I mean, Andy gave a tiny mention to Rat Film really briefly, which made me burst out because that's also in my top 10. And this is a documentary about rats in the city of Baltimore. I mean, this is the kind of bizarre year where I just felt like we're filling out all these strange niches in a mosaic, and it was a fascinating year to just watch anything.
So given all this, that there's so many great contenders, but not necessarily the one standout in documentary or the one standout in feature film, Andy, do you want to forecast a little bit looking into the future of 2018 about how you think all this might play out during the Golden Globes and the Oscars? No pressure.
Oh, dear. I can imagine Frances McDormand getting nominated and perhaps winning for Three Billboards because it's that kind of performance. Although, at the same time, you have all these other strong female performances like Jessica Chastain, like Margot Robbie and I, Tonya. It was a year rich with those.
Saoirse Ronan, as Amy mentioned as well, for Lady Bird.
It's a stronger year for women than it is for men. And as I've often pointed out in the past, usually when you look at the five best picture nominees versus the best actresses and the actors, the actors all tend to be nominated for best picture nominees. The actresses very rarely are. I think we'll see a flip this year.
Excellent segue to talk about what's ahead on Film Week. We're going to be taking a look at some of the films that came out this year about women in sports. We're going to be taking your calls, listeners, your favorite films about female athletes. It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Alex Cohen filling in for Larry Mantle. And if you're unable to listen live, remember you can always take Film Week with you. Subscribe and download it on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're a fan, leave us a good review. It helps other listeners find us. Don't go away. More Film Week in a moment.
This KPCC podcast is supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting Wonder Woman, directed by Patty Jenkins and starring Gal Gadot. The Wall Street Journal said the movie-going world deserves the best that Hollywood can deliver. Director Patty Jenkins' own achievements are remarkable. She has put her indelible stamp on this. And Vanity Fair said Wonder Woman is a triumph. Wonder Woman for consideration in all categories, including Best Picture.
Welcome back to Film Week on Air Talk. I'm Alex Cohen filling in this week for Larry Mantle. 2017 saw quite a few movies featuring women in sports. For example, Molly's Game about skier Molly Bloom, who once ran one of the world's most exclusive poker games. I, Tonya, about the very controversial figure skater Tonya Harding. And Battle of the Sexes about the 1973 tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, starring Emma Stone and Steve Carell.
Now, don't get me wrong. I love women in the bedroom and in the kitchen. But these days, they want to be everywhere. They want to be doing everything. Where is it going to end? Pretty soon, us fellas aren't going to be able to go to a ball game. We're not going to be able to go fishing. We're not going to be able to stop and have a drink after work. And that's what this whole women's lib thing is about.
Oh, this whole women's lib thing. Well, you know, when it came to female athletes in film, there weren't a whole lot of them back in the day. That may well be changing. If you're listening to Film Week Live, live on Friday. We'd love to hear what your favorite movie about women in sports is and why. You can give us a call at 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. You can also share on the Film Week page at kpcc.org. Weighing in here in studio, our Film Week critics, as well as Kathleen McHugh, chair of the Department of Film, TV, and Digital Media at UCLA. Great to have you with us, Kathleen.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I was looking through, there's, you know, a number of online lists of best movies about women in sports, and most of them, maybe not that surprisingly, are relatively recent, in the past decade or two. And you're nodding your head. There's not a big canyon here going back. It's there.
No, there isn't at all. But there, I loved the three films you chose to discuss today, because they're really kind of a zeitgeist, I think.
Yeah. So why now? Why do you think all of a sudden, after decades, literally, so that saw no films about female athletes, all of a sudden you think we've got a number of them coming up?
Well, it's interesting that all three of them are nonfiction. They're fiction films, but they're based on real characters. I think they all involve controversy.
Yeah.
And I also think that they express a kind of zeitgeist in a certain way. They couldn't have been planned in their time of production, but they all deal with women who are exceptional. They're exceptional talents, athletes. They're incredibly disciplined. And they each incur male envy in really significant ways.
I'd like to pick up on a point you made there, Kathleen, that I think is really interesting. It wasn't the films that we saw this year were not just female athletes. These were very controversial figures. I mean, you don't get much more controversial, certainly, than Tanya Harding and Molly Bloom had her run-ins with the law. And even Billie Jean King, who many of us recognize as a sports legend and hero now, was very controversial for any number of reasons. Amy, what do you think about the fact that it isn't just these, like, all-American, you know, shining, stunning, you know, it's not like the Nadia Comaneci story, to date myself.
No, I like exactly what you're saying, you know, because to me, this year of female athletes seems to be a step forward of what we've been talking about with asking for strong female characters. And I think that the quote-unquote strong female character has been misinterpreted as some chick with, like, a gun and some stilettos who can kill a bunch of people and look beautiful doing it, which I hate that. But these are not just strong female characters physically. They're strong female characters because they're complicated, exactly like what you're saying. They give these actresses dimensional people with flaws to play. They're polarizing. They're not just heroes. You know, they're complicated humans. And that's what I think actresses have been craving for, and audiences too.
I don't want to leave the gentleman in the room out of this conversation.
Look,
I'm
the father of a daughter. I celebrate this. It's funny. Andy and I could probably go on at length about the history of strong female characters in Hong Kong martial arts films, which goes decades and generations deep. So we're kind of catching up to that finally. You know, that's sad. Because there's a cultural barrier there that I think has taken a long time to fight through, which is that audiences want to see these films. Women are more important film goers than men are, because women bring men to the movies. Men don't bring women to the movies historically in this culture. And more significantly, I think this shows that actresses now have clout in Hollywood, and they can say, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. But it's oftentimes tricky to do. And again, I want to let Friday listeners know, if you'd like to weigh in on how women athletes have been portrayed in film, we'd love for you to call 866-893-5722. I have to confess here, I have a personal investment. And of course, my own personal favorite choice on this has got to be the film Whip It, about roller derby, because I worked on that film. And I realized something that I had never thought about before, which is that there are challenges which we've seen in some of the films this year. Margot Robbie, not a figure skater, you know, Emma Stone, not a tennis player. And unlike the men in Hollywood who are kind of encouraged to be buff and athletic, you know, that sadly the stereotype still exists that all Hollywood actresses should be under 100 pounds. So getting them up to speed to train to play a major athlete is no small feat. Do you think that might be part of it too, Kathleen McHugh?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the film Whip It, what I was most impressed about seeing that film was how physical and how talented the actors had to be to play those roles. And, you know, they got bruised and they broke bones, and both as a fictional portrayal and for the actors, I think it was probably really challenging and really a feel-good film.
Well, thank you. Andy, do you have a personal favorite? It doesn't have to be Whippet. Do you have a personal favorite women in sports film?
Of these?
Any film of all time. Well, we haven't even talked about A League of Their Own.
Oh,
I love A League of Their Own.
I was going to say personal best, but boy, I have to say it's so long ago that I'm not sure I remember it right. Mostly until now, female athlete biopics have been the turf of TV movies. You know, it's they can get that made more cheaply, and it shows. These films are terrifically well made, and the parts for women are extraordinary. I just looked at my 8 or 10 top films for the year and realized that, like, all but one of them centers around a strong female protagonist. You know, good, bad, or neither. I mean, Tonya Harding is kind of bad, but yes, she is, Amy.
Well, there's also been some positive images. A listener, Tom in Brentwood, chimed in. One of his favorite, and this is a really interesting choice, it's the documentary The Eagle Huntress.
Amazing movie.
Wonderful. About a young female eagle hunter, which was such a positive portrayal, which I think is an important part of this conversation, too. Kathleen McHugh, why is it important to have representations of women in sports? And what effect do you think that that has on the audience, both male and female?
Well, I think it gives an opportunity to see women's aspirations, their achievements, their physical excellence. You know, all three of these characters were just superb athletes, and I think it's inspiring. And I also want to say that it seems like they're the exemplary female athlete films, but also the teamwork films with women working both with and against each other in terms of competition. And it gives women a chance to show how excellent and the things they can achieve. I also want to mention one other film that I think is a really great film, which is Love and Basketball.
Great movie.
Basketball. Really amazing film.
And could I put a shout out for Bend It Like Beckham?
Oh, such a great film about women's soccer well. So many great ones to talk about. We encourage you to share some of your favorite films about women in sports on the KPCC website. My huge thanks to Kathleen McHugh, chair of the Department of Film, Television, and Digital Media, and a professor of English at UCLA. And our Film Week critics this week, Amy Nicholson, host of the Canon podcast, Andy Klein, KPCC film critic, and Wade Major, film critic for both KPCC and Cinegods.com. Looking forward to hearing from all of you about the great films in 2018. Thanks so much, all.